back to the Centre Pass podcast brought to you by Netball Draft Central. My name is Sophie Taylor, and as always, I'm joined by Taylor Melky. How's it going, Tay?
I'm very well, Soph. Clearly, we've got some exciting stuff to talk about. There was a grand final over the weekend, in case people have already forgotten, or maybe it's a premiership hangover for some New South Wales Swift fans, but a lot of excitement that happened.
Yeah, it was a huge grand final. You didn't really know what was going to happen. The Swifts got away with an early lead before the Giants bit back. And I guess we'll just head straight into that game now. It was the Swifts, I think everyone is aware now, that claimed the 2021 Suncorp Super Netball Premiership 63 over the Giants 59. What did you think of the game?
It was a really interesting one. And for me, as soon as the game started, I thought that the Swifts had the game won and done because they came out with that real aura of confidence and just everything looked like it was going to go their way. They played with a real sense of calmness as well. And what they got out to was 6-6 lead. And that was always going to be incredibly hard for the Giants to peg back and really try and stop that momentum. And clearly they got close within patches. But for me, it was always the Swifts game. I tipped the Giants. I'm not going to deny that. I did tip the Giants and thought that they were in with a real chance given the performance they had the week before. But as I also said in our last episode, I was hoping that the Giants hadn't played their grand final in that contest between the Fever. And unfortunately for them, they did play that grand final a week too early. So it was disappointing for the Giants, but that's not to say that they didn't showcase some real grit and determination throughout the game.
Yeah, I agree with that idea of the Giants playing their grand final a week early. And like, they did take a lead late in the first quarter, and it looked like each time the super shot would come around that would be their chance to get back in front of the Swifts. But at the end of the day, you don't just play the game for those last 5 minutes of each quarter. You need to be taking the lead earlier on in the quarter to really give yourself that momentum heading into those super shot periods. So the Giants just didn't seem very convincing in this outing, which was quite sad to see. Sophie Dwyer was well and truly out of it. She didn't seem to have that same impact as usual, whereas the Swifts seemed to have every single player fired up and ready to go. And something that was really, really interesting about this game for me was the amount of rotations that were made for the Swifts. They weren't necessarily forced rotations, but they seemed to be really tactical rotations, which we haven't really seen from the side this season.
Yeah, touching on that, the fact is that the Swifts 9 times out of 10 have more or less made changes because they've been forced into it or because things haven't been going well in attack, for example, in that goal attack position or goal shooter role with Sophie Garbin coming on and really injecting herself, or even the rotation of the wing attack with Nat Haythornthwaite, Paige Hadley, Taylor Fraser, Maddie Proud, I should say, all swinging through and having those glimpses or patches in wing attack. But this game, it was really obvious that there was a clear game plan that each and every Swifts player had out on court, whether or not they were a starting seven player or an impact player. It was really evident. And as you touched on, the fact that Bryony Akle was so calm and composed and just had this ability to read the play and know exactly when a change needed to happen to ensure that the Swifts kept their foot on the throat of the Giants was full testament to just her brains and netball nous.
Yeah, it was really clever the way that the subs were used. And when the Swifts first kind of started making those subs, and I think it was Sophie Garbin was the first change replacing Helen Housby, and I was kind of like, I don't quite know what the change was, like the intended change was there, because obviously number one, Garbin is best off in goal shooter, and number two, I thought Housby, even though she didn't necessarily have the most impressive scoreboard pressure, the work that she was doing off the ball and off the circle edge was opening up Sam Wallace so well. And I was kind of looking at that change going, I don't quite know what the reasoning for it was there, but fortunately it didn't seem to hinder the Swifts in any way. And unfortunately for Garbin, she didn't end up getting to stay on for much longer. I think it was maybe 5 or 6 minutes she got in the end of 4. So she didn't necessarily have the desired impact. But the rest of the changes that were made, I think Lauren Moore came on for a little bit, and Nat Haythornthwaite was the other one you touched on before, Tay. She played a significant role in the game. And I was really impressed with those changes because they seemed to come at exactly the right time to give the player a breather, number one. I think especially Maddie Turner, she was doing a really, really good job on Sophie Dwyer, but there were times where she would almost fade out, and I was kind of like, okay, more coming on for 5 minutes or 6 minutes, I think it was. Well, now it says 1 minute on the website. I swear it was more than 1 minute. It was towards the end of a quarter, just to give Maddie Turner a little bit of time to see what Dwyer was doing. Anyway, there were really good tactical changes, and I was really impressed with the way that Akul used the rolling subs and the way that she used the tactical timeouts to the Swifts' advantage rather than just using a timeout to stop the Giants in their tracks.
One thing I will also touch on is the fact that I was really happy and impressed with the fact that Taylor Fraser was able to stay out on court for that entire game. The last time they met in the first final, it was really interesting because we both touched on the fact that Taylor Fraser was doing a great job on the preliminary work of Maddie Hay, and this was evident in this game, is the fact that she was able to really shut down Hay and use her attacking mindset to kind of get in the head of Hay and then, you know, maneuver around it. And she was also a great force driving through the midcourt and so on and so forth. So she's a really exciting prospect for the Swifts and for fans just across the board, because she's an excitement machine, and this game was just a testament to it. Okay, she didn't get the accolades or the stats to kind of go with it, but as we always touch on, wing defenses never seem to get the pat on the back that every other position does, because it's the off the ball work that they do that is so impressive, and that is essentially what slowed down that Giants front end, because we've seen how damaging Hay can be when she hits the top of the circle or even in the pockets. You know, she's really dynamic and is able to feed into both Harton and Dwyer with great ease. And that's not to say that Maddie Hay didn't have a strong performance. She ended up with 17 goal assists and a couple of deflections, but it was a really good battle.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I feel like we can't talk about the Swifts midcourt without mentioning Maddie Proud, who we've found out after the fact played with a broken rib suffered in that Giants semi-final a few weeks ago. Probably that collision with Matilda McDonald at the end of the game, I think it was. It was like the last 2.5 minutes or something of the entire game. But the fact that Maddie Proud played a full game out in centre, she didn't rotate once, and you could not tell that she was in pain at all. And clearly she wouldn't have been allowed to play if it was a significant break and in an area probably where she could have punctured something. But the fact that she played through a broken rib just blows my mind, because you could not tell out on court. She was my MVP. I expected it to be her or Sam Wallace. Obviously, it did end up being Maddie Turner, which obviously congrats to her. But I was watching Proud the entire game going, surely, surely it's Proud.
Leadership personified, I think, is how you sum up Maddie Proud and the performance that she put out on court in this grand final, because she really clearly was ruining that 2019 grand final where she was sidelined, and it was agonizing for her to be unable to really celebrate. Yes, you know, of course you're proud and happy that your team made it, but it's a different feeling when you're not the one necessarily wearing that premiership medallion or so on and so forth. So the fact that she was actually able to get out on court and just lead the team the way that she did is just full credit to her. And how on earth she managed to do it with a broken rib is just beyond me. I think her teammate in Sophie Garbin threw her under the bus a bit and told her she, you know, she had all the others were fine and just to suck it up. But, you know, 60 minutes playing out in centre up against the likes of Jamie Lee Price, who A, is an incredibly fit and endurance-based athlete, and B, very physical, is no easy feat. So just kudos to her, and you could just see the elation on her face and how much it meant to her.
Yeah, and the Swifts' patient ball movement was really what earned them the win in the end. They were never, it wasn't hesitant movement, it was just patient chipping away, being like, we're not going to force this ball in, because they know how quickly the Giants can score, and especially with two hugely influential goalers in Joe Harton and Sophie Dwyer. The two of them are great from long range, they're great from short range, they can really go from anywhere. And the fact that the Swifts were able to hold on, and even when the Giants came out hunting in that last quarter, the Giants were relentless in that last quarter, 19 goals to 14. It was the only quarter they won. And realistically, if they hadn't had such a shaky third quarter, I think they would have been in with a real chance and would have forced some real pressure back onto the Swifts. But I think the real difference in this game for the Giants compared to the Fever game against the Fever in the prelim last week was the impact of Sam Pullman wasn't felt as heavily. And I think we touched on that last week, Tay, when we spoke about how Pullman did a really, really good job playing on Jahneel Fowler, but Sam Wallace is only a few centimetres shorter than Fowler and plays a very, very different game. And half of that game is the work rate of Housby opening Wallace up to the space and using that backspace to her advantage, getting that elevation. And there's an amazing photo of Sam Wallace just jumping vertical in the air. She's like 6 foot off the ground. It's ridiculous. Like, how does a player do that? But that just goes to show the significant impact that Wallace had and how Pullman just was unable to stop her. I mean, watching back those first 5 or so minutes where the Giants just failed to score, but Wallace at the other end, great defense from the Swifts, but Wallace at the other end was easily an arm's length away from Pullman at every single receive of the ball. It was just magnificent the way that she maneuvered her body for it.
You took the words right out of my mouth, because that was the contest that I was going to bring attention to. The fact that Sam Wallace, she managed 51 goals from 55 attempts. That is just ridiculous. And 3 super shots included in that. So just a stellar performance by her. And as you touched on, I think the hard thing sometimes is when you do so much preparation for one particular shooter, you then have to try and adjust quickly to the next coming. And I don't think that Pullman, as you touched on, was able to implement the same strategies and the same tactics that they used against the Fever on Sam Wallace, because the Swifts have a very different attacking system, in the sense that they don't necessarily just rely on Sam Wallace at the post. Yes, she is the predominant end strike shooter now, so more than she was in previous seasons. But Helen Housby has also proven time and time again that she can assert her own dominance. So the Giants were often hedging their bets between which player to try and combat, and that then allowed Wallace to just dominate to post. And Pullman wasn't able to combat the aerial presence that Wallace has, and I could get shot for saying this, but I would say that Wallace potentially has just a little bit more aerial capacity than what someone like Jahneel Fowler does. Fowler has the added height, but doesn't necessarily have the same leap and elevation that Wallace would have, or does have. That. So that was a really tough contest for Pullman, because Wallace was able to turn herself inside out time and time again and just, you know, dance along the baseline, whereas Fowler is 9 times out of 10 just going to post up under the ring and then command the ball. So
yeah,
it was tricky for the Giants, but all in all, the Swifts, you know, credit where credit's due. They played a phenomenal game and deserved the win in the end. But, you know, if you do look at some of the key players for the Giants, Joe Harton was once again, you know, as solid as they come. She was probably disappointed with her shooting percentage. She managed 78%, 79%. So normally she would have liked that up and about, but, you know, it was a strong performance by the Giants as well.
Yeah, and I was devastated for Joe Harton, because this season in particular, I've become much more of a fan of her work. I've always really liked the work that she does and her ability to shoot from any range within the circle and rotate between both positions as she does so. But it's been her, not so much her attitude, but her attitude towards some games in particular. And I've really, really come to like Joe Harton this season. So I was devastated for her. But she did an amazing interview at the end of the game and basically just commended the Swifts. And I was like, geez, like, it takes a lot to do that after a grand final where you've lost by 4 goals. It's a really close game. And at the end of the day, the Giants know exactly what it is that they need to improve on for next season, which is going to make things all the more interesting for them, because they, at the end of the day, the Giants didn't necessarily play a bad game. They were just outplayed by the Swifts. And I mean, you look at the likes of Amy Parmenta. She had another really good game. She picked up 2 intercepts, 4 gains. She just niggled away at Paige Hadley the entire game. And at the start, it seemed to be Hadley that had the momentum. And then it was Parmenter that stole it away. And then, of course, that tactical change came in with Nat Haythornthwaite taking the wing attack bib. And that's where Parmenter wasn't able to have as significant an impact just because of the speed of Haythornthwaite's footwork. It's just insane. But the Giants certainly had a lot of really good things to take out of the game. And again, I think we need to touch on Sophie Dwyer. She's only 19 years old. And I felt like that got brought up a lot during the broadcast in a negative sense, going, oh, she's only 19 years old. She's not cut out for this grand final business. And I was like, mate, the fact that she's on court in a grand final, yeah, sure, the Giants didn't necessarily have anyone they could rotate on for her. But at the end of the day, I think she well and truly held her own. And even though Maddie Turner kept her quiet for a lot of the game, and Turner obviously then went on to be MVP, I think a lot of that was also down to Dwyer also getting in her own head, going, oh, I've missed a couple of goals now, how do I recover? And she didn't necessarily have that in her. And I mean, I also loved when Joe Harton, there were a few times Harton could have been selfish and gone for an easy goal herself and passed it off to Dwyer instead to kind of exact that little bit of leadership and use her experience to draw the goal attack, the youngster, into the game. And I was really impressed with the way the Giants held themselves throughout the match, and especially in that last quarter coming back to really, really challenge the Swifts. Like, they were down by 10 goals at one point during the last quarter and to only lose by 4. And I think that margin was whittled down in the space of 2 minutes or something. I mean, the Giants are just going to continue to be a real, real threat in the coming years.
There's no denying the grit and determination shown from the Giants. And as you touched on, Sophie Dwyer is 19, and she should wear that with a badge of honour because of the season that she has had this year is just phenomenal. The fact that she was probably going to spend a majority on the bench just blows my mind, because I look at it and now go, there is no way that she should be on a bench next season with Kira Austin, you know, likely to return. So for me, this is a really promising step. She did still manage 17 goals from 23 attempts, so it's not by any means a bad performance. She also had 8 goal assists. So, you know, it's definitely a step in the right direction for not only Giants fans if she stays there, but Aussie Diamonds fans as well, because she's such a young up-and-coming player and she's got such a bright future ahead of her. And as you touched on, you know, Amy Parmenter was solid as ever. Jamie Lee Price also did her role, but clearly was just outshone that little bit by Maddie Proud, and that just drive and determination for her all-elusive premiership. So it was a good performance by the Giants, and I think you summed it up pretty much, Soph, when you said that the Swifts just outplayed the Giants. It wasn't a bad game. It was a great game, but they were just ever so close, but ever so far away. So very interesting now. And as I kind of touch on the fact of Sophie Dwyer and whether or not, you know, she will be with the Giants, the contract or signing period is soon to commence. We're not 100% sure when that will be, but I think that she could be an easy, or she'd be an obvious choice if the Vixens were on the hunt for someone.
Yeah, absolutely. And you made that transition exactly as I was going to. So go team. I agree. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting signing period. The Vixens have already announced Simone McInnes is staying at the club for another 4 years, which will take her to over 10 years in a coaching role at the club, which is amazing. And in that statement, I'm pretty sure they mentioned that it hasn't been confirmed when the signing period will start for SSN yet. So I guess instead of announcing signings this week, we just want to go over a couple that we think are things that should happen or could potentially happen. And obviously one is Sophie Dwyer, because at the end of the day, she does not deserve to be sitting on the bench. And the other one that is a significant one for me is Tipper Dwan. She had such an impeccable season last year and then rarely got the court time this season. She probably got maybe a little bit per game if she was lucky, but at the end of the day, Gretel Bueda did end up taking out that starting role for majority of the games, and by the end of the season was playing majority of the time too. So I think those two are my main two goal attacks where I'm like, they need to be on court next season. No, they are such good players that they do not deserve to be sitting on a bench for another season. And especially the fact that Kira Austin will be coming back at some point next year. We obviously don't know when. Obviously, there's the potential of Austin and Dwyer sharing that goal attack position because both of them are more than capable of playing out in wing attack. But then you're taking a bib off Maddie Hay, who also deserves a starting position. And I guess what I'd most expect if they do keep Dwyer and Austin, the Giants, is they do the kind of situation or scenario that they did with the Vixens last year with Maui Kumwenda and Teagan Phillip and Caitlin Thwaites, all three rotating constantly. But I don't know. I feel like for the Giants team in particular, that idea wouldn't work so well.
The other person that I think is front and center is Sophie Garben. There is no way that she can sit on a bench for another season. We saw how explosive she can be, and I think I might be dreaming if I get ahead of myself and say it would be great to see the likes of Garbin and Dwyer united in a golden circle, because if we are looking towards the future for Diamonds, that is a potential. Clearly, Garbin has been announced in the Diamonds team. Same with oh no, both Tipper Dwan and Sophie Dwyer have been named in the
I think they're in the development team, yeah.
development squad. So clearly, they've been seen and are renowned now or chosen to be that next step, and I think that they need to be able to get a starting position on a regular basis. I don't think we can have them sitting on a bench and kind of just having them as impact players. They definitely deserve a bib somewhere, and that's going to be the really exciting thing. And I suppose another goal shooter that we have to mention is Caitlin Bassett. Clearly, she is not signed on with Waikato Bay of Plenty Magic and is returning back home to Australia. So that also begs the question of where exactly will she end up this season or 2022, because you're not going to have the, I don't know if we call her the former Australian Diamonds captain. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll just call her Seabass, but you can't have Seabass sitting on a bench somewhere or not playing in the SSN. So there are plenty of options going around, and I think that this is going to be an absolutely cracking signing trade period because there are way too many options and way too many great players at our disposal to choose from.
Yeah, I have two things to add to that. The first thing is, it was very interesting. So Seabass is returning to Australia. She's been confirmed to be out of the upcoming Constellation Cup series purely because of injury. She obviously had a slight injury early on in the year. She had very heavy strapping on her knee, and in a social media post yesterday, she said something like she got to New Zealand with that strapping on one knee and then damaged her other meniscus in the other knee. Not long after in the ANZ Premiership. So she's doing surgery on one, maybe two. I'm not 100% sure what the entire go is there, but something she made really clear was that she was returning to Perth. And so that kind of poses the question about whether she is a potential to return to West Coast Fever if Jenille Fowler does not sign on. Obviously, she's very happily returning to Jamaica, or has returned to Jamaica now, I'm fairly certain, to see her daughter, which is so exciting for her. And a lot of those international players have been allowed to leave now, which is really, really great because obviously there's been so much uncertainty and so much commitment by these international players. So it's really, really good to see that they are able to have that support and head home. But the other thing I wanted to touch on here was it's a little bit difficult because SSN or netball in Australia in general is at a really weird growth point where we need more teams, but we can't. I think it would stretch the competition too thin and the player pool too thin if there were two more teams added. But an odd number of teams, if seven teams, it just doesn't seem to make sense. And so if you want to add teams and still have it be the greatest competition in the world, you can't add two because it will just like as much great talent as we have and as much great talent there is across the world, I think that adding two would just spread that far too thin and kind of not dull down the competition because obviously it's netball. You can't dull down netball. But I think it would kind of lower the overall quality, if that makes
you would
sense.
dilute it to a certain
That's
extent.
it.
I think one team, I know that an odd number is not necessarily the greatest, but I do think that one more team would actually just add that little bit extra something to the competition, because as we've touched on, there are a lot of great players and there are still other internationals that I'm sure are more than willing to come across. You look at the likes of Khalifa McCollum. She played for Collingwood this season, but virtually got no court time. So there are a whole heap of internationals. And even looking at Peace Proskovia, for example, you know, we've got a whole heap of internationals that are sitting on the bench and clearly are willing to come out to Australia to better their craft and so on. And it's a really good opportunity that maybe it is time to grow it, but steadily, but the fact is that, you know, if Jahneel Fowler doesn't return or to the West Coast Fever, then that could be an opening for Caitlin Bassett and potentially even Sophie Garbin, because I'm pretty sure that Garbin is a Perth girl. So,
yep, she is.
You know, that's another move that is potential, but clearly this is all speculative and we have absolutely no idea what's going to happen because there's no certainties at the moment.
Yeah, I have a few, like, certainties in my mind, if that makes sense. Like, I don't see someone like Kate Maloney or Maui Kumwenda leaving the Vixens. That's just a obviously personal thing, but Kumwenda wanted to play for the Vixens her entire career when she first arrived in Australia, so I don't see her leaving, and I don't see Kate Maloney leaving that captaincy. I don't think many of the captains would be potentials to leave. I got the impression that Joe Harton wouldn't be wanting to leave the Giants, and same with a lot of those bigger names in each team. So I think it's going to be very, very interesting knowing how many signing spots are up for grabs. Not a single player is pre-signed. So, and I don't think they would have even been allowed conversations until this week following the grand final. So it's definitely going to be very, very interesting to see what happens.
Well, speaking of signings, though, maybe we should look over to the ANZ Premiership. And this is the signing that we'd all kind of been waiting for and all pretty much suspected. And that is that Katrina Rore has signed on with the Waikato Bay of Plenty Magic, rounding out their team. And it's fair to say that it is a star-studded team.
Well, it's a star-studded team, but it's almost like the Pulse from 2 years ago.
Oh, that
because
too.
You've got all those ex-Pulse players now, and it's just kind of laughable to me that the Pulse have gotten rid of this season's coach, gotten back their premiership winning coach, and then all the players have gone to the Magic. And it's just kind of like, I don't quite see how it's going to all add up for the Pulse this season. I think the Magic are in a great position to finally see some success. I'm especially happy for Sam Winders, because looking at the players around her and how much of a joy she seems to be in and around the Magic playing group, I'm just happy that it looks like she's going to be seeing some success, because if there's anyone that deserves it, I think Sam Winders deserves that success.
I still hope that she does remain captain, though, because she has been there through thick and thin with the club and has been a real workhorse for them. So now they've got the likes of Rore, they've got the likes of Amelia and Ekenazio, Bailey Mez signed on with them too. So as we touched on, there are options aplenty. Oh, and Claire Kirsten through the midcourt as well. So yes, it is Pulse with a little bit of spice to it, but it's going to be interesting to see how that all sits, because I'm not 100% sure if they've announced their coach yet either, because
I don't think they have.
They got a new coach at the end of the season, or they're looking for a new coach now. So it's going to be interesting to see how that shaves up. And it's just exciting, though, because you can see that the connections are clearly really strong, and that's what they're hoping to build on at the Magic. So they've pretty much all but done and dusted with their signings. I think the only other one was the steal with Georgia Heffernan joining the side once again after doing her ACL last year. So that's exciting for her and her sister as well. So plenty to look forward to in the ANZ Premiership.
Yeah, definitely. Well, sticking with New Zealand, I don't know whether we mentioned this last week, but the England Roses are travelling, or they have now arrived in New Zealand for 2 weeks quarantine for a couple of international series, first off playing the New Zealand Silver Ferns. I'm assuming that it is also pending nationwide restrictions for New Zealand at the moment, and obviously restrictions in Australia to come over here following that series. I think the first New Zealand-England series is meant to be played late September, and then the Australian-England series early October, and then obviously the Constellation Cup. Assuming that's all played up northern Queensland, that kind of area, away from a lot of the restrictions that we're currently going through across the nation. So that's going to be very, very interesting. It's going to be the first matches for Australia against England in over 3 years. So that's a pretty significant thing. Obviously, we've seen somewhat a little bit of turnover across the Australian squad, and I think England looks like to me as though they're in the middle of their real build period at the moment. They've got a lot of young, burgeoning talent coming out of that pathway, which is so exciting to see. So I think that series is going to be really, really fascinating.
It's going to be cracking. And as you touched on, it's been so long since the two countries have played against each other. So it's going to be a real testing out period to see how they kind of shape up against one another, because everything has changed since the last time they played. You touched on the fact with there's new players for both countries, and it's just going to be a very different ballpark. And we always know that international netball is a completely different game to what your domestic level, as you can kind of put it that way, Suncorp Super Netball, Vitality Super Netball, or Vitality League, and then the ANZ Premiership. So to see that finally international netball is actually returning as well is, I'm sure it's exciting for the players, but it's just as exciting for the fans that have been calling out for it.
Yeah, it's going to be so good, and hopefully not too long to wait now, obviously pending restrictions, but fingers crossed we have something good to watch and something to really, really look forward to, especially people in New South Wales quarantine and isolation and things like that. Before we finish off, we'll quickly go through some of the best and fairest winners over the last week. Kate Maloney was the first one announced. I don't think anyone was surprised that she won the most valued player for the Vixens. She's just been that workhorse through the midcourt all season. The Giants announced that it's Joe Harton. Again, very well deserved. Another captain, completely. I was expecting that one because she's just stood head and shoulders above this season. Swifts was Sam Wallace. Again, expected that one. And the Magpies one, I think, was the most exciting one for me, was Jodie Ann Ward. And I think it was Kelsey Brown and Shimona Nelson were equal second. But Ward in particular, we've gone on and on about her this season. She's had such an impressive season and really gone above and beyond her 2020 season. So I was really happy about that.
The Magpies one was a real changing of the guard moment. This was trying almost like that look to the future and saying, this is what Jodie Ann Ward produced this year. So imagine what she can do next year. And I'm hoping that she stays in the black and white, because I think her development has been just tenfold this season. And as you touched on, Brown and Shimona Nelson also coming in runners up is also a really exciting thing, because we've seen just the growth of Nelson this season. So fingers crossed that she is able to continue that upwards trajectory. And the rest you named, Maloney, Wallace, Harton, no one's surprised by that, because all three of them have been incredible players for their respective sides and real leaders out on court. So kudos to them.
Well, I think that wraps up our episode this week. A nice short one again to go this week. Obviously, we did just touch on Shimona Nelson. We spoke to her just a few weeks ago about her season and the coaching and the impact of the coaches this season. So go back and listen to that. It was a fantastic interview with her. But I think that's all we've really got time for this week. Thank you so much for listening. As always, go check us out on Twitter at Centrepass Pod and Facebook Centrepass Podcast. Listen on Spotify, iTunes, anywhere you get your podcast. And thank you again.